5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Picture yourself a very successful, hardworking healthcare worker, healthcare administrator, right in the prime of their life, very excited about their work, very, very invested in the importance of their work. And then all of a sudden, they get diagnosed with a cancer and their entire life changes. They end up in the hospital, they end up critically ill, and all of a sudden their entire life changes. And not only does their entire life change, their entire life's work changed. Now you think I'm making that up, but I am not. That is exactly the story of our guest today, soon to be Dr. Claire Ludwick, who is joining us from Ottawa, along with our friend, Dr. Dawn Stacey, who is a regular on our podcast. Welcome, ladies, to yet part two of our patient empowerment module.
Hi, Tom.
I want to say hi, Dawn.
Hello. It's great to be here again. And I'm excited about this topic around patients as partners, because this is really where my research and my focus as a nurse researcher lies. And I just want to get you to think about one of the frameworks that I really like, which is the Carmen framework. And in this framework, she talks about how we really can have patients as partners in their care at the individual level or their personal care level. Like, how do we involve them in shared decision making and have them as partners in their care? We can also have patients involved in our committees and safety committees of hospitals. We can have patients involved as partners and in health policy, and how do we make policy decisions and have their voice heard at that level. But one of the other areas that we're focused on today is one of the ones that excites me, is around how do we also bring them onto research teams as research partners, where I actually can learn with and from the patients as we together design and conduct and interpret the findings from our research studies.
Thank you very much for that, Dawn. I was mentioning that I am hopeful that our listeners actually are listening to these two podcasts together, or certainly in order, because one complements the other. And when it comes to patient empowerment, our first podcast, part one, was Dawn and Claire discussing the Canadian model, the symptom management model, the CARES program. And this model that we're going to be talking about, the research, is actually bringing patients not just in the shared decision-making realm, but even much deeper, as Dawn so nicely mentioned. I had said to you guys offline that I am a newbie. I am a brand new, I guess, a learner or student of the shared decision-making, at least the formalized shared decision-making model, and that's how we met. And now taking it a step further, who would have thought engaging patients who we revolve our treatments and our life around actually being a partner to us, not them being the patient down here and we being the caregivers up here, but absolutely as equals, as equal partners to try to make life better, to make better research, better cares, better treatments, better managements. And to our listeners, the story that I told you introducing this particular podcast was about our courageous hero, Claire Ludwick. Claire, I'm not going to let you get away with this. So I want you to really do a better job than I did describing that process. You were excited about your research. You were working with Dawn on the symptom management side of the ball. And then all of a sudden, your life took a different trajectory, as we mentioned.
Thank you, Tom. My journey to my current research has had kind of an unconventional path, and came about as a result of being engaged in the first year of my PhD. I was actually at that time looking at nursing leadership and how we could implement COSTARs how we could use nursing leadership to implement COSTARS. And I became very, very acutely unwell over a period of about 6 to 8 months. I just was treated for pneumonia after pneumonia after pneumonia. I had multiple courses of antibiotics. I knew something wasn't right. I ended up in the emergency room twice. And on that second trip to the emergency room, I was so acutely ill. I couldn't stand. I was not breathing well. I was very seriously ill, and was ill for in the hospital for about 12 days, and just had my life really shaken, as many listeners will relate to. That diagnosis of cancer, particularly a cancer that's incurable, really shakes you to the core. And on top of that, being really deconditioned, and then having a fairly aggressive treatment regime thrown in, my life, which I thought had been going really, really very well, just suddenly turned itself on its head. And I was kind of in the really a very despondent state, and I reached out to Dawn. I had taken a break from my PhD, obviously, to focus on my health. And I said to Dawn, is there anything that that I can help with? You know, I don't have much energy. I'm not sure what I can do at this point. My my thought processes, my brain was fuzzy from the chemo. And I just wasn't sure what I could do. So she said, okay, well, let's figure something out here. I'm just looking for somebody to analyze some interviews with patients, nurses and patients using COSTARS. So the symptom management practice guides for nurses. And I said, okay, I'll have a go. And I remember it really clearly, because I think the first interview that I listened to, I realized that I wasn't listening to it as a researcher. I wasn't listening to it as a nurse, but I was so immersed in that patient's experience, really listening to what the patient was saying and how the nurse was hearing that. Was the nurse hearing the patient as they were describing their symptoms and looking at how they could better manage their symptoms? And so it really struck me that, oh my gosh, you know, this is really the patient's lens, the patient's viewpoint that I'm viewing this from. And so then began many months of stop-start analysis, but really looking at analyzing these interview transcripts as a patient. And then, you know, just, I would have to say, Dawn was amazing, just in terms of being very, very patient with my stop-start, managing to analyze one or two interviews here and there as my health would permit and as my treatment regime would permit. And it just really flipped my whole thinking about the quality of the data analysis through the patient's lens. And I think, you know, Dawn tells a good story about, you know, the difference in analysis between my viewpoint as a patient and the other research assistant who was really coming at it from an academic nursing lens, and just the marked qualitative difference in our analyses, and then putting those analyses together to come up with a much more rounded view of our findings. And I think that that really, really sparked my interest in how how patients, how incorporating the patient's viewpoint, their voice into research could shape research in a different way, not just in the findings, but, you know, getting patient input into the questions, guiding research teams in terms of what are the important things for patients to focus on. And I don't know, Dawn, if you want to jump in there.
No, my experience with you as the patient on the team was quite impressive, because it really made me also as a researcher think differently about the patient's role on the research team. And I wouldn't have asked for you to do this, but what I found when I asked is it actually, you were quite happy to be doing something positive when you're on your treatment, that you were, instead of sitting just focused only on getting through your chemotherapy treatment, you would be coming in and kind of excited that you had something that you could work on that was actually really contributing strongly in terms of what's the patient's perspective around what's happening in these calls between nurses and patients.
And kudos to you, Dawn, for having the prescience to be able to see what value there was from Claire's lens as opposed to a traditional academic lens. And I think that's what strengthens this work. And I do want the listeners to realize that the work that Claire is going to articulate, particularly about patients being partners, but a particularly underrepresented and vulnerable subgroup of patients who are very frail and very sick. And again, make no mistake about it, this is groundbreaking stuff. This stuff has never been done before. So to our two pioneers, thank you very much. Just a quick, what would you say, keen insight from a person who's a bit of a, I wouldn't say a history buff in that I know that much about history, but I am fascinated by recurring themes. And the recurring themes have always been, people making decisions about the underrepresented, the vulnerable, people who have, the minority people, the people who are, and I don't mean minority, color of your skin minority, I mean being the lesser number in the population, having decisions made about your life and your quality of life made by people who are not in a position to make those decisions, to the underrepresented, to the more serious historical discrepancies in prejudice, racial prejudice, whether it be sexual orientation, whether it be color of skin, getting back to that, socioeconomic disparities, all of the policies that have been made historically throughout our human history have been made by people who are not really positioned to make those decisions. And in this case, who would have thought bringing patients in to help guide policy for patients like is really, I hate to laugh, but it's almost so obvious that it's obscure. So I did want to kind of throw that in there. And now I'm going to let you guys, as I said, yes, turn it over to you guys about the research. Yes.
So as we are moving forward with Claire analyzing these transcripts or of the interaction between the nurse and the patients, I was like, oh, what would you like to do with your PhD when you come back after your leave for on chemotherapy? Because I thought she could actually be the one leading this project and be the first author on this project of this work. And so this really opened the door to Claire to be able to think about what does she really want to do for her PhD.
And I think that's a great point, Dawn, because it was suddenly, everything was kind of falling into place and making sense. So I had been sort of struggling with my topic, which I wasn't finding very exciting, having gone through chemo and everything. And then just looking at the research and just the background of patient engagement in research, or public and patient involvement in research. And so there is a fairly extensive history over the last few decades of having the public and patients contribute to research in at various different levels, from consulting patients about what's important to them, and involving them throughout the research project. But as I look deeper into this area, there was a real gap in the literature. And so the patients that tended to be involved as partners in research tended to be those who were more well. So that, you know, were sort of more long-term survivors, or had been deemed cured, or were really sort of more feeling more well. And so there tended to be a bias for researchers when they were looking at engaging patients as partners on research teams to engage those that weren't frail or weren't seriously ill. And there are lots of good reasons. So we looked at a systematic review, and we conducted a systematic review. And there are lots of good reasons for that. You know, there are barriers to that. So researchers and clinicians were worried about overburdening patients who were going through aggressive treatment regimes, or who were frail, or who, you know, were in their final days of life, or the final few months of life. And so researchers quite rightly didn't want to overburden patients, but they hadn't actually really reached out to patients to see whether it would be a burden, or whether in fact it would be beneficial to them. So, and then there were other barriers to involving and engaging patients as partners, particularly those who were seriously ill. Things like meeting times, trying to set meetings around aggressive treatment regimes, or times when patients were feeling ill, concerns that involving patients would really delay the progress of the project. And so lots of barriers. But then we also looked at some of the benefits to engaging frail and seriously ill patients in research. And we've talked about just the quality, perhaps the different lens of data analysis, but also looking at other benefits to patients themselves. And from my own experience, I felt like I was reconstituting myself, like putting myself back together again, feeling like I was doing something worthwhile, that I was adding something, adding my voice, adding to research that was going to be really, really important to patients, not just to researchers, but to patients. And then just hearing from other researchers on the project team that Dawn was leading, and just having their feedback about the difference, the different way that they were viewing my engagement.
And one of the pieces of that, Claire, I remember clearly, is they suddenly wanted you to come and talk to their staff. They wanted you to come and talk about your experience to the nurses and to the radiation therapists, because they actually started to realize that it would be good for them to hear from someone like yourself that could talk about the experience of having the symptoms, but also about your interpretation of the way the nurses and radiation therapists actually give that symptom guidance.
Agreed. And really looking at, and using, I think, personal stories. So it really puts a human face on the reasons why we are doing research. And I think that that's the other benefit to, shaping, having patients' voices shape research questions, look at how we can better recruit patients into studies, how we can adapt the tools for research so that we gather the information that's important to patients, and then looking at how we can get those research findings out into the clinical environment and really putting a human face on the research. So it's that connection back.
And Dawn, you had actually given us a great example offline of implementation of this theory. And that was a patient that you mentioned that was part of a regional board on the pharmaceutical side, I think it was.
Yes. So one of the patient partners that I like to do work with as well as with Claire is that she actually sat on the policy decision-making for the province of Ontario that decides on where to spend money around new medications that are made available in the province for people with any type of condition. And she said to me, well, I have a rare condition. And when I sit there, I want all the medications for my condition approved. But what I realize is there's only so much money, and I need to be fair listening to all of the different medications that are coming forward for approval and make sure that the patient's voice, my voice, is heard, but not only about me and my condition, but also representing patients with various different conditions. And so there is an opportunity for patient engagement in many different ways.
And you nicely mentioned it in the different sort of the algorithm, I guess the hierarchy, right? The strata of where patients could make an impact. And you know, as a cancer survivorship advocacy platform, we always say, what is the take-home message for a particular podcast? And for these podcasts, of course, patient empowerment, symptom management, one, for both the patient as well as for their caregiver. And number two is patient partnership in research. And make no mistake, Croc Nation, that this is very, very avant-garde. It's new, but it's not going anywhere. It's going to go forward. You're going to see more and more patients involved on boards, being board of directors and being important and integral parts of boards. And not just the type of boards that come and just basically are rubber stamp boards, but I'm talking about working boards, boards that actually want to do something, boards that want to shake the system. They want to make changes. They want to make changes for themselves, but not necessarily for themselves, but for them representing, being the representative of the patients that are out there, of the constituency. I wanted to say, Claire, that I read both of your papers. I'm sure there's more than two, but the two that I really did deep dive on was on the ethical considerations of engaging frail and seriously ill patients as partners in research. And the other one was the systematic review. And you had made mention of the systematic review. Can you tell our listeners, because not everybody is on the academic side, and then I know how important a systematic review is, and I know how much work went behind this 22-page paper. So can you give us a little background on, the methodology of your research and what a systematic review is and your findings from that review?
Absolutely. So a systematic review really looks at all of the literature out there, looking at sort of health services research, medical research, and really defining, you know, what your population is. So the population that we were looking at was frail and seriously ill patients engaged as partners in research. And then looking at that and making sure, and I'm putting this in plain language, making sure that the studies, all of those thousands of studies out there, fit the criteria, fit that population that we were looking at, frail and seriously ill patients who were engaged as partners in research. And so we had a definition for frailty and for serious illness, so that we were able to then look at, did those patients fit that criteria? And then what we did was we had a framework in place that looked at what were the barriers and what were the facilitators to engaging frail and seriously ill patients in research. What were the impacts to patients themselves, to researchers, and to the research itself. And so we pulled together those findings from those studies. So, you know, I think from the thousands of studies that we had, there were just around 30 studies included in our synthesis. And so the barriers that we found, as I said, we looked at barriers at the system level. So looking at policies and processes, resources, both financial and human resources to conduct the study. We looked at team level, you know, trust and collaboration was a really big, both a barrier and a facilitator. And so it's really important, we found, when you're engaging frail and seriously ill patients in research, to make sure that you've got this trusting relationship and that patients also know what's in it for them. And really for researchers to think about, what does this add in terms of value? And so we know that, you know, those things are really important, as well as making sure that patients on the team know what their role is and what their what contribution is expected of them, and making sure that there are really good communication structures in place, and just making sure really that researchers believe in the value of patient engagement. Otherwise, it can be tokenistic. And what we saw as well is that funding, a lot of the funding agencies, you know, within the US, within Canada, the UK, Australia, a lot of research funding now builds in a mandatory patient engagement component. And so, you know, there's a real incentive for researchers to bring patients on board. But if you're not doing it in an authentic and meaningful way, in a purposeful way, then it can actually do more harm to patients. And we speak to that in the ethical considerations, because especially patients who are frail and seriously ill, if they have limited time, or if they are just, you know, the time that they have is the good time that they have is few and far between, if they're between treatment regimes, then it really is disrespectful of teams to engage them if they're not buying into hearing what patients are contributing. So, you know, there are lots of different incentives, I would say, to engage patients, and really taking advantage or really leveraging patients' experiential knowledge can provide research teams with new insight, whether that's into looking at the questions that are important that guide a research proposal or a grant application, or whether it's the data analysis or the conduct as well. There are some studies out there that have patients actually conducting interviews. And so that's been shown to be really worthwhile, because patients, you know, if you're trying to elicit information from a patient and they can connect with the person in front of them, that's been found to be really beneficial. So you can elicit sometimes more honest responses because there's that connection there and that identification.
So articulately said. I know you mentioned before about sometimes you lose your thoughts from the chemotherapy, but I have to tell you, you might be one of the most focused, articulate people I have ever met, and God bless you. Dawn, you are the co-author on these two papers. Not that there's anything to add, because Claire did such a beautiful job, but I would love to get your perspective as well from these two papers.
So these two papers are very novel in that no one's actually pulled these studies together to be able to even talk about the contribution of patients who are frail or seriously ill as partners in research. And my contributions is more around being careful about the conduct of how the study was done to make sure that it was a high quality study, which Claire has done in both of these cases really well, high quality summary of what was reported. We also chose to republish them in Research Involvement Engagement. It's actually a journal focused on patients as partners. And in the review process, when we submit the papers, they actually also have a patient that reviews the paper and gives feedback to the researchers. And this journal is open access, which means these papers are available for anyone to have access to.
So we'll make sure, Angel, we put this on the website for sure. I wanted to ask you both a question. So you would agree, Claire, as a cancer survivor, that certain survivors just have it in their DNA, you know, that they're focused on their treatments, on their quality of life, on their cure. And then there are others that in their DNA, they're leaders. They are patients that are interested in not only getting through their own journey, and this is no judgment on the patients that want to focus on their personal journey, absolutely not at all, but more so as a, I guess, would you say, a thank you to people like you who in their DNA are leaders who want to do not for not only for themselves, but do for others. How could some of these survivor heroes who are interested in being part of this new, you know, this new vanguard of patients who are now not only getting through treatments and helping other patients through advocacy and through, you know, just support and prayer and friendship and things like that, and fellowship, but also on a more, on the higher level that we're talking about now, partnering in certain research endeavors. How would you recommend a fellow survivor with this sort of vision? How would you go about getting them involved?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Tom, because I think that there are lots of avenues out there and people are not necessarily aware of that. So survivors, you know, aren't necessarily aware of the opportunities to partner in research. And so there are networks. So survivorship networks will often have researchers will make connections with the networks to say, you know, we are looking to partner with patients really as members of a steering committee or in other research activities. And so connecting with the networks is a great opportunity. I see Dawn raising.
Also go back to the cancer programs where they had treatment and ask for if there is opportunities for participating in research. One of my projects was focused around cancer survivorship and how they needed to be supported to be transferring their care back into the community. And so I myself was looking for cancer survivors to be involved in that project. And so at any one time, there's many different projects on the go. And I would encourage just to go back into the system, you know, and ask. The other place is that sometimes like the American Cancer Society might have an opportunity where they collect people interested in participating as partners in research. So there are different routes to find opportunities to participate in research.
Now, Angel and I, we're actually in a more community hospital setting, cancer center. Very proud of it. But again, you know, we're not the University of Ottawa or the consortium of hospitals that you guys are involved with. Would we be able to, I would think, since we're, you know, you would go to your closest tertiary area where for us it would be New York City, maybe refer them to a Memorial Sloan Kettering or to a Mount Sinai or something like that for evaluation of input as a patient.
Yes, those are perfect examples of where you could volunteer for being a patient partner on research.
Claire, I may have interrupted you. I apologize.
Oh, no, no, not at all. I just think that there are lots of different opportunities. I mean, there are different survivorship associations. And I think as researchers become more attuned and more comfortable with recruiting outside of their own patients, that they're now beginning to advertise and seek volunteers through, various associations and networks. So that may be another avenue. And the other thing that perhaps I didn't make clear at the very beginning, because I think there is some confusion about what it means to partner in research. And so really when we're talking about partnership on research teams, we're talking about being alongside the researchers and contributing to the research project itself. So it's doing research with rather than doing research for patients. So I think that that's a really important distinction, especially for the survivors on the podcast who may be interested in becoming a research partner.
With is the key word. I agree 1,000,000%. We want the patients to work with the researchers, not for the researchers. I couldn't agree more. Just another insight. You know, having been a doctor snob, for my entire life, reading medical journals from my society, blah blah blah. I have to say, since I've done this podcast and I do my homework before every podcast, I make sure I know everything I need to know about for our listeners to get the best out of these podcasts and to be respectful of our guests who generously give their time and expertise. I will say that I've been delving into the nursing research and the nursing journals and the nursing papers, and they are outstanding. So I want any doctors who might be listening to this, caregivers, physician caregivers, please read these articles. These articles are rich, they're deep, they're amazing. I mean, they're very, very intricate. They're very scientifically sound. So I did want to kind of bring that up and thank the nursing community for their contributions. It's not like nursing was 35 years ago. This is real science. This is important stuff. And as you use the word novel, Dawn, I use the word groundbreaking. This is really amazingly important stuff. In my closing question, before I ask you guys your thoughts or whatever, I wanted to ask you both where you see this type of patient partnership and research going in the next 5 years.
Let you go first, Claire.
Thanks, Dawn. So I see that there's a big movement now for patient-led research. And so we see it in other areas. So certainly in mental health, there is more of a movement for service user led research. And so I think that the next big step is user or survivor led research. But I do believe that we've got a long way to go. So I think that there is a willingness and appetite to go there, but I'm not sure that we've got the foundation solidly enough in place. I think a lot of people talk about engaging patients as partners in research, but not all of them kind of achieve the real objective there. So there's still a lot of tokenistic involvement. And I think that until we get over that, we'll never have successful survivor-led research.
But you do have hope.
I do have hope. I do have hope.
Definitely Claire is pushing the boundaries around how she envisions this really happening over time. But I still struggle with every day I run into researchers that think they're doing it and they're not. And they have the patient's name on the paper, but they're not truly involving that patient as a partner. And I think that's what we really need to focus on in the next 5 years is true, meaningful involvement of patients as partners.
And I want to say, you know, getting to know now, Claire, this is our second podcast we're doing together, getting a flavor for your personality. I mean, to me, there is no coincidence of the strength and courage that you have. And it really just, it just illuminates from you, and you light up the screen, and in addition, but not just the screen itself, but you are, in your own quiet, thoughtful way, you don't compromise your values. And going back to the first podcast, you mentioned how people were getting better as caregivers addressing symptoms. And you're like, well, yeah, you're maybe a little better, but it's not trickling down to us yet. You have a very high bar, and the fact that you're keeping that bar high, I think, is going to drive us to perform at the level that you expect us to be. And we're falling short both on that side, the symptom control, and also on the patient, partnering with patients and research. So never change that demand, that demand for excellence from people around you. So that quality is really going to drive your work, I think, very far, and really reach many, many more people than if it was just someone who might be a little more lukewarm, or maybe a little bit, yeah, we're better, yeah, we're getting there. Hey, it's better than it was 30 years ago. Like, you don't want to hear that. You want to hear, like, still not good, still not good. We need to get better. Dawn, do you notice that when you're working with Claire, when she's doing research with you?
Absolutely. Claire is definitely one that will speak up in the different groups as well that I see her in, around making sure that there's recognition for the value of patients as partners on the team. And so it's always a pleasure for me to be in opportunities where I can work with Claire.
And Claire, since I see in my mind, like, this is Claire's podcast, you know, this one on patient partnership. So do you, my last question to you before I turn it over to you guys and to Angel, do you at all feel like a little, I'm going to use the word very loosely, schizophrenic, in the sense that, you know, on the one hand, you're a researcher, you're a scientist, you know, you're a healthcare person, you're on this side, and then on the other side is the patient part of you. Is it easy for you to go back and forth? Is it, I would see it as a superpower, to be honest with you.
that's a great way of putting it, Tom. I think the one of the benefits, I think, of having been a patient partner during the really acute phase of my illness, really, I think, was the physical body, my physical illness dominating. And so I, in many respects, I found it easier during that time to have that kind of separation and that input, because I was experiencing that through my body and my treatment. So but yeah, it certainly gives me a very different lens. I mean, I used to be a palliative care nurse many years ago, and I thought I knew what fatigue was. And until I experienced that really extreme fatigue, I thought, oh my God, I had no idea. I thought I knew this, but until I felt it in my body, I really hadn't a clue.
Any closing remarks from my two favorite patient empowerment advocates?
So I think we need to continue to be challenged with how do we hear the patient voice in everything that we do, whether it's in our research, in our clinical practice, in our organization of the hospitals. We need to really make sure the patient voice is strong and heard.
Claire?
And I would echo that 100%. And I think having patients as partners in research, in shaping the research, is that last bastion we kind of crashed through, and we really are walking the talk about, you know, making sure that we are empowering patients, that we're listening to their voice and incorporating their voices.
Angel, you always get the last word.
You know, it's funny. I spoke, last podcast, and I said that I thought of the word courage.
Yes.
When we talked about Claire. Then we listened to part two, and you bring up superpowers. And I'm reminded of the very famous superhero movie, my favorite, Superman, where Superman's father, or Clark Kent's father, Earth father, says, "You are here for a reason." On my show, Have Faith, Let It Begin, I did an episode recently called Trust Your Abilities. And when you look at what we're seeing here, we have the benefit of having the Zoom. We're seeing Dawn, Stacy, we're seeing Claire. The stars lined up perfectly. That's no accident. And what we do together on our podcasts is that we try to share the good word, whether that's with medical, whether that's in my show, spiritual. Why do we do that? Inspire somebody. These two people had two amazing articles, and they're changing the industry.
Two hundreds.
Well, even better.
Hundreds and hundreds.
Even better.
Yeah.
They're changing.
I can't even lift Dawn Stacy's CV. Thank God it's thank God it's electronic. That's all I have to say.
So I mean, just to basically end my sentence is that you're literally doing something. I don't think you will. I hope you understand the severity of exactly the purpose of why you're here, and that it's not an accident. And I remember you had said on the last podcast, you know, you used the analogy of how God can laugh.
Yes.
And that, well, you know, they gave Claire a door.
Yes.
Claire didn't know the door she was going to take.
Yes.
But when she opened the door and realized the obstacles and the journey, she allowed herself to kick further doors and open new ones. And one door that was slightly opened was the door that opened up a new venture. That would be Dawn.
And make no mistake about it. 100 people go to that door. Only one person opens that door. On today's podcast, soon to be Dr. Claire Ludwig, thank you for opening that door and giving us so much insight and so much, such a gift. Your life is truly a gift. You are a gift. Dr. Dawn Stacy, whose entire life commitment to the cancer survivor is evident, not just in her words, but in her actions, we thank you as well. As always, we end every podcast with a shout out of gratitude. My co-host, Angel Santana, Half Faith, Let It Begin. Thank you very much, my friend.
You're welcome. We got to bring her back when she becomes a doctor.
Well, we're gonna have a celebration.
Oh, gotta have
absolutely
one.
Balloons, everything. You know? In my mind, she's already a professor, for God's sake. I want to just say on behalf of Angel and I, Mr. Rod Friedman, I'd be very remiss not to thank him for his wonderful work with our podcast. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson from Hollywood, thank you for your financial support and your belief in us and helping all these fine cancer survivors. And Angel, Claire, Dawn, we end this podcast as we end every podcast on behalf of the four of us. We wish all of you, all of our Croc Nation, everyone on the Croc Survivorship Bus, we wish you all a very long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God keep you. Peace.